So what happens next?
What happens next is January of 76, we form a new band, Pecos, which is country and rock with John Thompson, Gary Cutter, Lance Dunkirk, and myself. We played a lot of different jobs, the Windjammer and City Zoo.
Where was the Windjammer?
The Windjammer was in Clearwater.
Where was the City Zoo?
City Zoo was in Zimmerman. Hofbrau was in Blaine. The Launching Pad was in Moundsview. Mr. Bob's in Crystal. The Bethel Inn, East Bethel. And the Holiday Inn in Anoka. We played a lot of those places. We had a lot of fun times.
After Pecos, what happened?
After Pecos, I ended up in a band called Gold Dust, which was a pick-me-up from the one before, because Lance had left the band to go move to Loveland, Colorado, and then we'd gotten John Adolphson in on drums. John Adolphson was a good friend of mine who played guitar and singer and drummer, and he came in with us, and we played places in Big Lake, Will's Place, Zeke's in Elk River, Norman Mike's in Minneapolis, the Temple Bar in Minneapolis. We played a lot of places around. It was a good band.
What's the time frame on Gold Dust?
Time frame on Gold Dust would have been probably October of 76 to December of 76.
After Gold Dust comes to an end, what is next in your musical lineup?
After Gold Dust comes to an end, it would probably be February of 1977. We started a band called Sunrise, and I wanted to do something that made more money. So I put together Sunrise as a variety band who played everything from like 1940s to 1970s disco. I wanted to aim at the Holiday Inn thing. So we'd signed on with Holiday Inn, and we played a lot of the Holiday Inn. So we traveled a lot from this Holiday Inn to that one and a few other things. And in between there, when we couldn't get jobs and bookings, we took places like Bolero Lanes and Apple Valley Bowling and stuff. Or where is it? Lakeville. Apple Lanes or something like that down there. We played there, different jobs. But we ended up playing a big variety of songs to where we could appeal to a lot of different people. That band was like February of 77 to August of 79, and that was with John Thompson on vocals because he did Elvis and that kind of just great. Mike Comer was in the band. He came on. Rick Leibbrotten was on drums and myself. We started out doing a bunch of different stuff, and then after a while, Leibbrotten left the band because he got a job to play with Denny and the Tornadoes, offered him a job because they needed a drummer who could sing. So he ended up leaving us to go to them, and we ended up getting Dan Fashion on drums, which to me was just one of the high points of my career of playing, was playing with Dan Fashion. And so at that point, it would have been Big John, John Richardson, Mike Comer, Dan Fashion, and myself. We played a lot of Holiday Inns. We played a lot of we spent a lot of time at Bolero Lanes in Northeast Minneapolis down there. We played the Launching Pad and different things like that. During the time that we were in Sunrise, I was making pretty good money then because I was working a regular day job plus being in the band. So I ended up starting Sunrise Sound Recording Studio with John Richardson, myself and him. We started Sunrise Sound in, I think it was probably mid-summer of 77 is when that started being put together. We started it as a 4-track, and it went on to an 8-track, and then on to a 16-track. And we did every band and every person around that we possibly could that we worked with. The place worked 7 days a week, all the time. And we did, you know, Cynthia Johnson from Lip Sync. We did Joey Mullen from Badfinger was in the studio. We did Ipso Facto. We had, I'm missing a lot of bands, but we did just tons and tons of bands that came and recorded there.
So back to Sunrise, playing in a Holiday Inn. Did that mean you had to dress up in a suit?
Yes, we had like 3 different clothes changes. We used to dress up in suits, and then we had our little vest outfits and stuff like that to where you had to just have that look.
Any highlights from Sunrise?
Sunrise has just a million highlights. I mean, all the good people I met and all the times all the songs we played. I mean, we had 5 different vocalists in the band, and we did a lot of different stuff. I have great memories of playing in the band. We had fun. The band and I never had any, the band never had a disagreement. I mean, the whole time that Sunrise was going for 3 years, there was never a band fight. Nobody fought. It just got along great.
And was that's, and that's unusual for a band?
Really? I mean, most bands you get into, you can play two songs and all of a sudden you're arguing. You know, so this was just unreal to go 3 years and playing all those jobs and all that time and never fighting. We just always got along great.
Okay, so after Sunrise, what happens next?
After Sunrise, that probably broke up in August of 79. I think Mike Comer called me a couple weeks later and said that he was starting a band called Grand Avenue and wanted to know if I would play these jobs. He had jobs at Uptown Bar and a lot of places in St. Paul. So I ended up going down and I hopped in with him. And I can't remember the two other guys that were in the band. You know, I feel bad about that, but... I'm missing a couple of guys. It was Mike Comer, myself, and two other guys.
What kind of music did Grand Avenue play?
Grand Avenue just played a lot of everything. We did all songs from Bobby V to the Bee Gees, you know. It just, we did a lot of different stuff. The highlight with that band is just playing with Mike Comer, because Mike Comer was just a gas. He was always fun to play with.
Now, I understand Crow made somewhat of a comeback here with Crow featuring Dave Wagner in 80 to 82. What's the story behind that?
In January of 1980, Dave Anthony had called me and said that he had a few conversations with Dave Wagner, and he was probably going to put together a new version of Crow, get them out there and do some things. So he asked me if I could be a part of it, and I said, sure. So I was supposed to put together a bunch of people and see if I could come up with some kind of a band and get it going for him. I think Larry Wiegand was originally supposed to be in it, but he was tied up with somebody else. So we got together in the first part of June of 1980 with Dave Wagner. John Richardson came in on guitar because he was my right-wing guy. I called Lonnie Knight because I needed another heavy-duty guy. I found Dave Martin in a band and myself. So we started rehearsing. We did some songs. And I think it was after probably about 3 weeks, Lonnie Knight decided to leave the band. So we needed somebody else. And Dave Martin said that he knew Jeff Christensen as a guitar player. And he brought him in. And everything kind of clicked. It went really smooth. We had Dave Wagner, John Richardson, Jeff Christensen, Dave Martin, Robbie Belleville, and myself. And we'd played some of the old Crow songs, the hits that had to be done, like Evil Woman, Cottage Cheese, Slow Down, and Don't Try to Lay No Boogie Woogie, and a few other things.
Any highlights from that version of Crow?
That one, I wrote a lot of the songs when we put out the album that came out in 82. That album was for a K101 radio show, featured all local bands. And actually, we were on their first album that came out in fall of 80. And we did a live version of Evil Woman. And then after that, we did the thing at Met Center with K101 for 82. That's when we got together and did the On the Run thing there.
Where else did the band play?
The band played at St. Croix Boom Company, Iron Horse and Crystal. We did a lot of different stuff. Dave Anthony landed the April Wine Tour. So we opened for the group April Wine. And we did like a 7-state tour with them. That was really good and a lot of fun. The band did really, really well. When we get jobs at some of these places, they go, well, you don't do any cover songs. And then we go, well, we're Crow. And then featuring Dave Wagner. And they go, well, no, we need somebody to, you know, the dancers want to hear songs that they played. So we had to learn a bunch of other stuff. So picture, if you will, Dave Wagner doing Jesse's Girl and a lot of other different songs. So we had to learn a bunch of different things. And then I was out of the band in October of 81. And the band disbanded actually in December of 81. And Dave Wagner joined Whiskey River and everybody else went different ways. It was, like I say, the show. Dave Anthony came to me and said, K101 wants you guys to get back together to, you know, do the show at Met Center. So we did that in October of 82. I got back together, and I think it was Dave Wagner, Abe Booker, John Richardson, Jim Potter was on keyboards at that time, and myself on bass. And we did the show, and there just wasn't enough to keep the band together and keep it going. So I think October of 82, Crow featuring Dave Wagner was kind of over.
When did the album come out?
The album came out in October of 82. We released the album right when we came out with the show at the Met Center.
And that's Crow On the Run.
Crow featuring Dave Wagner, and the album was called On the Run.
And that was recorded where?
That was recorded actually at Sunrise Sound, my studio. We did all the stuff there.
And there was a single also, right?
Someone was a single. It was out on colored vinyl, yellow vinyl.
That's the A side?
Yes. At that time, the reason why the band was kind of having so much trouble is because all the vocalists that were out, the radio stations would say, well, all the vocalists that are selling right now are sticks. All the high vocals, you know, Def Leppard, all the bands with the girly voices. Those were going, all of a sudden here you got Dave Wagner with the evil woman, you know, he's got the low voice and everything like that. It was kind of clashing what was their format or whatever. So it wasn't enough to keep us together.
Who was the writer on Someone?
I was. I wrote 90% of the songs in Crow featuring Dave Wagner.
Well, what was the B-side of the 45?
All for the Love of Money.
And who wrote that?
I did.
Were you able to get any airplay with the 45?
We got a little bit of airplay, but not much. It just, the whole thing didn't seem to go anywhere. I don't know if, we weren't on a major label. We were on Peak, which was Dave and Anthony and my label. It didn't go anywhere. No funding.
So after that version of Crow comes to end, what do you do next?
Well, actually, during that version of Crow, in the fall of 80, we had a few lapses there where we didn't have any jobs. So Big John Thompson again called me up and said he had these jobs booked, and we did them as JT Silverstar, and that name came from not John Thompson, but I was doing a commercial once for Schmidt Beer, and I said, howdy, this is JT Silverstar, and that's where that name came from. And we did about five shows with John Richardson on guitar, Robbie Belleville, myself, and John Thompson. We went out and played under JT Silverstar, and that was during the period of Crow. Actually, Robbie Belleville was also in a few other bands at that time that would call him up and he'd go off and play with, because Crow didn't have all the jobs going at that time.
What's the next band in the lineup?
Next band in lineups would have been like April of 82. This is, I'd sat around since October, and I had the itch to get out there and play again. So I answered an ad in City Pages to join a band called Jinx. Well, to try out for a band called Jinx, J-Y-N-X. And it was a rock all cover band. And that would have been from April of 82 to September of 82. And that would have been Tom Edson, Steve Harris, Tim Hanley, Rick Waller, and myself. And we played Loose Ends, formerly the Launching Pad in Moundsview. We played Mr. B's in St. Paul, Boyd's on the River. We were there a lot. And we played a lot of little private parties and things like that around. We played songs by the Tubes and Eddie Money and a lot of different rock bands that were out at the time. It was a good sounding band. Had a lot of fun.
What comes next after Jinx?
After Jinx, I ended up with the Bowery Boys, with Kevin Silvers had called me and said, come on out and sit in with us. So I went out and sat in with the band and ended up staying for 3 or 4 months. And we played like the By Georgian and St. Francis and a few VFWs around the Anoka area.
Who was in the Bowery Boys?
Kevin Silvers, Rick Lean, Rich Olson, and myself. And we played like By Georgian and St. Francis and then a few VFWs and American Legions around the Anoka area.
What kind of music?
It was, we did all different stuff from 50s to current.
So after the Bowery Boys, what happens next?
Well, in January of 83, after doing a lot of different recording sessions at the house where my studio was, we'd started playing just some cover songs and laughing, joking around. So we decided to put together a band. It was Mike Holm on lead vocals, John Richardson lead guitar, Mark Fisher on drums, Jim Potter on keyboards, and myself. And we decided to put together a band. And we'd played and learned a bunch of songs at that time, a bunch of current things that were out. We needed a name, so I picked up TV Guide and opened it up, and it was a preview for Dick Tracy. So I said, how about Dick Tracy? And that's where the name came from. From the TV guy, Dick Tracy. We played like T. Wright's in Brooklyn Center. We played Uptown Bar in Minneapolis. We played Paradise Ballroom in Oconia, Farmer's Daughter in Litchfield, Loesch's in Hastings. We were there a lot. Jack's Press Bar in St. Cloud and a few other places. I know we played The Registry in Bloomington. And we did a lot, like I say, a lot of cover songs. We did Donnie Iris, Survivor, Eddie Money, Huey Lewis in the News, Johnny Cougar, Badfinger, Foreigner, Rolling Stones, Night Ranger, a lot of stuff like that. A lot of like drivey rock. It was a great band.
And after that, what happens next?
I decided to take some time off from 1992 to 2004 to raise a family. Up until 2004, when my son decided to play drums in a band and get things going, and all of a sudden, me watching them and stuff like that, I started dragging out some of the recording equipment I had from years ago, and then all of a sudden buying a few more pieces, and all of a sudden here we go, Sunrise Sound resurrected in 2004, and we started doing a whole bunch of different things with digital recording and remastering of old tapes and stuff like that, and then we ended up getting Pro Tools and going on with that. So Sunrise Sound started all over again, working with different bands and doing some things. We recorded like Rogers High School bands. We did like the Battle of Bands at the schools, and a lot of different groups were coming in and doing recordings.
So you had a move in location.
Yes, there. We're now in Rogers, Minnesota, and we started the whole thing over again.
All right, what happens next?
Okay, what happens next is I get a phone call from Tom Campbell saying that he's getting together with some people who are doing a film on the Big Kids of Mid-America, which features all the local bands from this area, and wanted to know if I would put together some information on Joker's Wild and come down and see them. So I said, sure. So I grabbed my scrapbook and all my stuff, and me and my kid go down there, and we're down there talking with Tom Campbell and doing all the stuff, having all of our pictures copied. And Tom says, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I have a recording studio, and I'm doing a lot of different projects. And he says, well, I'm doing a lot of band histories and stuff like that. And I says, well, I started a website called minipaulmusic.com. And I says, I would love to have you come out and see what we could put together, and if we can get anything going. You could do one side of it, and I could do the other side. Tom, as you know, you came out.
I did. And then in 2010, I believe Joker's Wild was inducted into the Mid-America Music Hall of Fame.
Yes, they were. Doug Sparks had called me and said that Joker's Wild was due for induction, and we got together and did that. And for the show on September 17th and 18th, or 18th, I believe it was, Lonnie Knight had got together with us, Pete Huber, myself, and Bill Jordan from one of the earlier groups, and we got out there and we'd played a bunch of songs.
What was that like to get together with your old bandmates and play live?
It was a lot of fun. It sparked a lot of things in me on playing and getting out there in front of people and doing things, and I really enjoyed it.
Now, would that have been the first time your wife, Susie, and your kids, Ando and Kelly, would have seen you play live with
Yes.
Joker's Wild?
Yes. Yep. They'd never seen that before.
What did they think about it?
Well, actually, Susie would have seen us with the reunions in 1999 and 1990.
Okay.
Yeah, she would have seen us then, but the kids didn't know nothing about me playing or anything like that.
What did they think about it?
They thought it was kind of different to see Dad up on stage with a guitar, banging around, singing.
And now you're playing in a band, or two bands.
I'm playing in two bands at the time. Right now I'm in the Silvers Brothers, which is Kevin Silvers, Steve Silvers, Mark Silvers, and myself. And we play at the Narrows every couple of months out in Navarre. And we do kind of like rock and R&B. R&B is kind of like our feature, what we do. And other than that, when I'm not doing that, I'm in a band called the Jonards, which plays a lot of different rock stuff and a lot of originals.
What kind of bass guitars have you played over the years, and which ones do you like best?
I started off with Harmony, went to Guild. From Guild, I went to Fender. From Fender, I went to Rickenbacker. I had Hagstrom in there. I had so many different basses that I've played. My Music Man that I have right now is my baby. I love that the most. But I also have a 1973 Guild, which I still play. That's my favorites. My Music Man is my favorite. My Guild is number two.
Is there a bass guitar you had in the past that you wish you had now?
Oh, everybody will say yes to that. I mean, the one that burnt up in the fire, I think, my original Guild that I'd got from B-Sharp. I wish I had that, but that burnt up in the fire at someplace else when the club caught on fire that night.
So your musical career starts in the early to mid-60s as a roadie for the Underbeats, and right now, it's January 2015.
Yeah, we could actually go back a little earlier of lip-singing Elvis back in 56.
Right, we could.
And all the way up until now and still going.
So my question is it still fun to get out there on stage and play live for people?
Yes, it is.
Do you still hide behind the amp?
No, I actually stand out in front now. No room behind the amp.
Do you have any favorite bass players?
Favorite bass players? I'd have to say Jack Bruce of Cream, I really loved. Chris Squire from the band Yes. He always impressed me. And my groovy guy would be Gerald Jamot from the B.B. King group. Always played the stuff I couldn't think of. It was just great.
And how do you like being a music historian?
I enjoy being a music historian and working with you, Tom.
Well, thank you.
As tough as it can be sometimes, just like, you know, that husband and wife relationship where you collide every now and then, but it still works out and we're doing good.
Well, thank you. I feel the same.
I think we have a lot of people out there that probably thank and really appreciate things we're doing.
It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. So any final thoughts on your career in the music business spanning all these decades?
Well, I don't like the term final thoughts, but I've really enjoyed all the people I've played with. They deserve mentioning, and I've had a great time. I'm thankful I'm still going.
You don't like the term final thoughts?
No, I didn't like final thoughts. At our age, you don't say final.
So looking back at your career in the music business, do you have any concluding thoughts you wish to add here?
I have played with just great people and had a lot of fun over the years. I mean, like, you know, 40, 50 years of doing this. And it's just been a great ride. It really has. I don't have, I'm sure there was times out there where we fought with band members and stuff like that and it seemed ugly. But right now, looking back, it's just great. I've had a great ride and I'm still going, and that's the good part of it.
Denny, thank you for taking the time to share with us the story of your time in the music business.
Thank you, Tom.
The preceding interview was recorded on January 25th, 2015, at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MiniPawMusic.com.